When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe UFC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Troy Radio, episode 550. A Levi's episode coming to you on Wednesday, August 7th. We're going to talk about the start of fall camp, walk through the headlines, and so much more, including the final installation of the big 10-minute segment here on the podcast, talking about the Wisconsin Badgers. So join us for that a little bit later, but so much more here coming up. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at RandomTroy, like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/RandomTroy, email address, RandomTroyFanside.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227. Suck It, What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Radio Troy Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. You know, we do have a certain guest. Last week, you know, we talked about, we had a special co-host on my face. This one, we
Rip to Paxton.
Yes. This time we have a special co-host who has a cuter face. There she is. If you're watching us on YouTube, finally, Jesse is perfectly in focus for the camera. If you're listening, there is a really cute dog who just closed her eyes and is laying perfectly framed. Yeah, there she is.
I think we've figured out how to trick her into doing what we want in order to have Jesse Cam, which is, number one, to have the camera set up permanently and not introduce a new element into her space. Have it while she's getting her afternoon walk, I set up the camera and everything like that so she doesn't notice. And then number two, feeding her before we podcast, I think we get her a nice little post-food nap situation instead of like sitting near me like starting to whine because she's hungry. So there we go.
Yeah, it's good. Kenny calls her name Jessie. Zaman says good dog. She is a good dog. She's an adorable dog. She's the cutest dog, the best dog that there is. But Alicia, we got a bunch of stuff to get to in this episode, which of course, I don't know if you've heard, is brought to you by Mint Mobile, because Mint Mobile is getting everybody a great deal on phones right now. And you know I love a good deal, but I'm not going to subject myself to some, you know, proverbial DMV trip just to save a buck, right? It's got to be easy. No hoops, no BS. I don't like hula hoops. I'm more of a hopscotch guy. So it means I like to hop from side to side on to Mint Mobile. And it was easy to get wireless for $15 a month with the purchase of a 3-month plan. It's super easy. The longest part of the process was the time on hold. The old guys hopscotch into the new guys over at Mint Mobile. Just go to their website, mintmobile.com/Troy. You'll see right now all 3-month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan. Bring your phone, bring your contacts, probably not your exes, and find out how easy it is to switch to Mint Mobile. Get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. To get this offer, of course, you got to go to mintmobile.com. Your new 3 month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Troy. That's mintmobile.com/Troy. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Troy. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. Do the math. New customers on the first 3 month plans only. Lower speeds above 40 gigs on the unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details. Alicia, we need to see this podcast for more details because there's a lot to come talking about USC and fall camp. So let's get to the news, shall we? Let's start somewhere. Let's start with coaching updates. Alicia, last week the news was that scholarship counts are no longer a thing. This time, coaching counts, we're going to talk about that today, no longer a thing, which means that some titles might be changing. Lincoln Riley talked about this week. SC will have a special teams coach, which I know a lot of people were wanting last year after some failures in the special team aspect. And Ryan Karche pointed out that expect Taylor Mays to be one of the staffers who earns a new title. What's this mean?
It doesn't mean much this year.
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
Not pessimistic, just realistic. Just understanding what this actually means. You know, the headline is USC will have a special teams coach. The subhead is his name is probably Ryan Doherty. The lead is Ryan Doherty, senior special teams analyst, gets a new title to special teams coach.
Yeah.
Still the same dude running special teams. Still the same process for coaching and practicing special teams. So it's not like a revolution. Like giving, this is me making an assumption that he'll get that title. From my understanding is that these are all going to be internal titles that are given for this season. I think maybe next year there will be additional hires that can take on more titles and expand the staff, and we'll see what kind of stuff happens on that front. But for right now, what you're going to be seeing is just guys who are currently analysts be given titles that allow them, I assume, to coach on to do hands-on coaching, which is the restriction that that was always in place for those guys, is that there were limitations about whether or not you could be involved in recruiting. There were limitations about whether or not you could be on the field coaching players, all of that. I just think they're broadening the horizons for some of these guys, but they're not necessarily guys who weren't already involved in the coaching staff and infrastructure of football.
How do you feel about all the sort of restrictions, limits, red tape, et cetera, regulations being stripped away on so many of these things in terms of, you know, scholarship limits, coaching limits? Do you actually find this as a positive? Is it a negative? Where do you stand?
I think this is inevitable until this was inevitable until the inevitable restructuring of college football around an entity that is or isn't the NCAA. I think that for right now, it's probably not. I mean, that's a good thing in one sense because it's going to allow more positions to be filled and more resources to be spent. The bad thing about it is that not having any of those limits means that you're going to end up with some programs who employ a bajillion coaches and have, you know, a ridiculous amount of resources compared to everybody else. And I don't know that that makes a great product. You create more opportunities to limit the amount of parity you have because Alabama's going to have like six running backs coaches who are running drills for all of their players. And, you know, there are lesser programs that won't be able to afford that. I think that's the other question about the scholarship limits. I like that they are essentially doing away with the walk-on infrastructure, which is to say that if you have walk-ons that you would like to give scholarships to, if you think they have earned a scholarship, now you can essentially give them that scholarship, whether they're the 86th or 89th or 90th player on your roster. It just depends on how much money you have allocated for that. You don't have to sort of wait for somebody to leave to then, you know, hand out a little pittance to the walk-on guys who are putting in a lot of hard work. My understanding on the roster front, on the scholarship front, is that very few programs are actually going to push the limits on that. I think the limit for football is now going to, or, you know, whatever, it, if we're going to call it a limit, is like 100 or 105. And it seems that very few programs are even going to be going too much above 100. Yeah. Because, again, there are diminishing returns. Now, if you can have a coaching staff that's enormous, then you can manage 105 scholarship players. But
there's only so many...
You can only have 11 players on the field at a time.
Yeah.
You can only keep however many players happy with playing time. The transfer portal makes it so that even if you're investing scholarships in guys, if they're not playing, if they are, you know, 5, 6, 7 spots down the depth chart, you're not going to retain them if they're quality depth. Your quality depth has a limit there as well, just from that perspective. So in one sense, it doesn't change a lot. In another sense, I do worry because there will always be programs that are trying to push the limits, that are trying to game the system as much as they can. And I worry about what that does to the sport. But I'm also not stressing this because the way I see it, all of these rule changes, because of antitrust things and because of like the legalese, this will all get resolved when whatever entity governs college football in the what I expect to be near future will create guide rails in conference structures that are like agreed upon in something like a collective bargaining agreement that's going to sort of make all of this not necessarily be something you have to worry about for long.
I think that makes sound sense. I do worry that that's a little bit wishful thinking, because if they're actually like, yes, we need a governing body for football and we need a commissioner for college football, but that would mean all the individual conferences giving up a lot of power, because right now the power is not centralized, right? Like the NCAA doesn't have much power at all. The conferences call so many of the shots. Why would the SEC and the Big Ten give up things? Like, would they just call their own shots, and then will we have different rules in every conference to broker these things? I don't know. Like, I'm of the one mind that on the one hand, I think this is good for the players because it's more opportunities for scholarships. For the guys who are still having, you know, COVID eligibility for an extra season and all that stuff, I think it's good that you don't have to worry about, like, taking away scholarships from people to make room for, or scaring them away with the transfer portal, all that stuff, and allows people to transfer more freely, and it's better access and stuff for the players, in theory. I do worry that any time that you strip away any sort of limitation, regulation of any sort, somebody will game the system to the point where it screws over somebody, if not most people. And like, that's where I'm skeptical on a lot of this stuff. The coaching stuff, I think, is great to, like, it's great to, you know, have the ability for SC to go out and, you know, hire more coaches. But like you said,
and keep and be competitive in keeping their analysts, because, for instance, if you're able to give Taylor Mays a title, you're less, and a title and a raise and whatever it is that they give him, you're less likely to lose him to an assistant coaching job somewhere else.
Having said that, you're going to tell me that there's not going to be a school that has 45 coaches?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like if that's possible, then, you know, once, you know, the support staff started growing, they grew exponentially once you could sort of do that, and it was the thing to do. So, like, why wouldn't this continue to happen in a sort of made man sense?
But this is also, we are thinking of these things from an unlimited resources perspective.
Right.
And I think that we can look at certain programs and think they have a capacity to go all in on the unlimited resources, but realistically, and this is something USC fans complain about USC, like, the resources are actually not unlimited. Well, and maybe Phil Knight is so desperate for a national title that he lets Oregon, you know, pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to have a coaching staff that is bloated, right, to that degree. But I think the vast majority of programs aren't going to have that level of just sort of free flowing spending power, or if they do, it's only going to last for so long, because eventually everybody's seeing all of that free flowing spending power. You will have the collective sort of come together to say, like, hey, we can't do USC and Nebraska and Wisconsin and even Ohio State, even Michigan, like, some of these programs are going to sit back and say, like, this is not sustainable, guys.
I agree. And in a general sense, yes, I do think that it's going to be a little bit different than what happens in baseball, where you can spend whatever the hell you want for players, right?
Yeah.
But you see all these owners feign poverty, rickets. And, you know, God forbid you pay a dollar over the luxury tax thing. And it's essentially going to be the same thing, right? Because, like, teams could just hire a million coaches. But I think that, like, it just takes one to do it, to be desperate enough. And then you just create that gap. Whereas, like, you have a lot of teams that end up being the Pirates, and a lot of teams, and maybe a few teams that are willing to spend twice as much, you know, and be Alabama or Oregon for a season. I don't know.
This is why I think eventually we will come to a structure that regulates a lot of this. Mostly because if everybody looks at, like, the NFL as a model of really strong, like, league health, and I think that I can't imagine college football continues in a mode where they just let it be the Wild Wild West. So, like, you can't sustain this. And maybe it is ESPN and Fox who govern how this happens.
Yeah.
But also there's a broadcast bubble too that might burst, and, like, and then you're going to end up in a situation where, you know, people are realizing that the dollars that they thought were going to be there are not there anymore, and everybody sort of contracts and figures out a new way to go.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it all goes. I don't trust anybody. That's
no, I'm with you. I don't either.
We'll see how it goes. Let's talk more about SC and fall camp. In helmet communication is a thing now. There's that little green dot that's going to be on the back of helmets. There will be a little radio in there so teams can communicate via headset with one player on each side of the ball, just like the NFL does, just like some high schools do. This is long overdue.
It's weird that it took until 2024for this bit of technology.
The sign-stealing thing, it's like the big signs with emojis and memes on it have been a thing since, you know, Chip Kelly originated a lot of that stuff years ago.
Honestly,
and
I think,
why didn't it become a thing then?
I think part of the reason it didn't become a thing then is because one of the quirky things about college football is the ridiculous sideline sign antics that you have.
It's fun,
it's
but when
distinctly
you
distinctly college football.
Yeah, but when you have the Connor Stallions thing, you know, it sort of there's a very easy answer to this whole thing. Obviously Miller Moss will be, or Jaden Mayava, whoever the starting quarterback is, will be the guy with the green dot on offense. On defense, it's looking like Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. Not only being the mic, but the mic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sort of pretty much confirms what we all essentially knew, which was insofar as we can guess the positions that USC is using for the linebacker designations. Easton Mascarenhas Arnold is the Mike, and Ed Mason Cobb is the Will, I assume.
The speaker.
Yeah, the speaker. Denton Lynn did say that, you know, Easton is definitely the one who is the plan to have be the primary guy receiving the call, but that they have a bunch of guys who are using it as well to get used to it, because if something happens to EMA or, you know, something goes on, they want people to be comfortable with hearing that in their ears. It's just it's a new thing that they want them to get used to. So that makes a lot of sense, but it is also just funny that, you know, you just think about it, like, Cam Smith never had a green dot at USC. Like, just thinking about all the great linebackers that USC has had, and it's weird that this is so late.
caveman football slowly coming to an end.
Riley did say that, you know, as far as the quarterback and Danton Lynn too, like, this is going to change the way they do things, but also not, because they will continue to do things a little bit more old school in certain veins as well. So
yeah, it's going to be a combination of everything. There's going to probably be a learning curve as well. I think it does help that SC has a lot of NFL input on staff. Denton Lynn has NFL ties. We know Henderson's got NFL ties, right? There's guys with NFL ties on that defensive staff that I think that know exactly how the process goes. One of the big players who's getting a lot of talk in the first week of fall camp is Kobe Pepe, a guy who I think has sort of been a forgotten man on USC's defensive front for the last couple of years. Wasn't there a transfer scare for him last year? Was it him or Sircona that was like looking at like Louisville to go on a visit right before the, remember that? Am I crazy?
All of the above on the defensive line. It felt like all of them, because there have been so many big guys who have come in who we've had a lot of high expectations for, and then they just for a multitude of reasons never sort of pan out, and then eventually they just, you know, go. And it, frankly, it was kind of a surprise that Kobe Pepe stuck around.
Yeah,
and Lincoln Riley essentially said that himself. He said that when he got to USC, when Riley got to USC, he didn't think that Kobe Pepe was going to make it. He didn't think that Kobe Pepe was going to be able to stay on this USC team and compete. And he literally said that he was, quote unquote, quote, easily the most out of shape player on this roster, end quote, about Kobe Pepe, which is a pretty candid thing to say about a player. But I think he's able to say it now because, another quote, he has totally changed his body. Riley was very complimentary of Kobe Pepe in the way that he overcame some of the injuries that were holding him back, some of the habits that were holding him back, to get in really, really good shape, to put him in a position where he has an opportunity to really compete for USC, whether as a contributor at nose tackle or make a push to be the nose tackle. I mean, in an ideal world, if you could get Kobe Pepe to be your starting nose tackle, and when I mean that, I mean your space eating gap plugging nose tackle, freeing up Bear Alexander to get after the quarterback a little bit more, get after the backfield, freeing up the other defensive tackles to go out there and make plays, because the big 315-pound dude is out there, you know, eating up blocks. It helps the linebackers. Easton Mascarenhas Arnold was talking about how he's loved seeing Pepe, you know, get in the backfield and make his life easier for him too by occupying blockers. So in an ideal world, Kobe Pepe comes forward and lives up to the expectations and the hopes and promise that we had for him coming out of high school, and really solves a major problem for USC this year. I think we all looked at the transfer portal and thought that USC really needed to get aggressive to bring in a Kobe Pepe type body, because no one was banking on him being this guy. So this is one of the most encouraging things to come out of fall camp. Now, I'm going to preface literally everything we say for the rest of this segment. It's fall camp. They haven't put on pads yet. Wednesday was their first shell practice. And talk is talk in fall camp. In a second, I'm going to explain something that I will have said ad nauseum the entire time, essentially, I've been covering this team about some stuff that was said about the offensive line. But the point is that the proof is in the pudding. We'll see what these guys do when the season actually begins. We'll see if this talk about Kobe Pepe actually comes to anything, because mm-hmm. we've seen a lot of guys get talked about and nothing come to them. But I don't know that I've ever been quite so invested in the talk being real as I am with Kobe Pepe right now, because this is pretty big if he can take that step up. And Riley also said that, you know, it works out really well because this system suits him more than Alex Wrench's system. And so, you know, maybe this is his chance. Maybe this is his window to make a difference.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he fits there, because this is probably the biggest position of need on the entire team, you can say, is the nose tackle spot. Nose guard, nose tackle, defensive tackle, whatever you want to exactly call it. We talked about before, like, if one of the guys that I think SC could have certainly used, you know, as a transfer was Jay Toya coming back from UCLA, right? But that didn't happen. And SC always tried to rely on the hopes of, like, Brandon Peely being that guy. We've talked about a lot of times, like, Stevie Tuikolovatu was so good in 2016, just being a space eater, being a guy who just plugged gaps, that you need somebody to sort of fill that role. It's been a long time since SC's been able to have that dude, and you put them next to Bear Alexander to make a lot of plays, and I think it would help out if he's able to have that role. Now, in regards to, you know, you talking about buying in a fall camp, Alicia, I'm pulling up some audio here. Where is it? Oh, one second here. Here we go. I think this is it.
My God, Ben Griffiths.
Yeah. Can I just remind the people?
Ben Griffiths, Carrie Angeline, Jamel Cook, Dylan Baxter,
the patron saint of this.
There have been a million running backs and receivers who have
Jonathan
been
Jonathan Lockett.
You know, we've looked at ends all the time, linebackers, ends, everything. Corner, safety, literally every position. We've gotten excited about players because of fall camp hype. So again, yeah, I'm putting that word of caution on all of this, but
you don't want to guarantee an All-American?
I am not going to guarantee an All-American.
All right.
But I will say, and this is, I'm going to say it's impossible, because in order to be an All-American, you kind of need name recognition at that position. But if Kobe Pepe turned out to be an All-American, then USC's winning national title, baby.
Slow down.
Yeah.
Slow down.
I actually think this is a case of optimistic, Alicia.
Slow down a little bit. just a little bit. Lincoln Riley talked to the media and had a lot of stuff to say. You have a ton of notes here in our rundown. What were the biggest things for you?
Staying on the defensive line, he talked about Carlin Jones and the other young defensive linemen that USC brought in this past cycle having a realistic chance to play early. Carlin Jones, when you see him, he looks like a college football player already, which is pretty cool for a freshman defensive lineman on a team that needs some help from freshman defensive linemen, realistically.
6'2", 310.
Yeah, and he looks every bit of it. So that's kind of exciting. He does have a learning curve, but I think with some of the freshmen on the defensive line, what would be really nice is if USC is able to really get a lot out of them in the second half of the season. Like, I don't think that you realistically need to be throwing them into the fire early, but you need them to be providing you some depth as the season goes deep. And if Carlin Jones and some of those other guys can be that, then that would be very, very positive.
Can I tell you my favorite thing about Carlin Jones really quick?
Yes.
So he's listed at 310.
310 and not like a high school offensive lineman who is just carrying a lot of fat,
sure,
and needs to trim in some muscle. 310. Like, this is like a muscled, developed 310.
Is weight is listed as 310, and he went to Bay Cities High School. Do you see the correlation? It's in the cards. It's in the cards. 310.
If you know it, you know
it. Yeah. It's the best area code in the history of the world. Yes.
Yeah, sure.
The other thing, let's talk about big battles on the offensive line, right guard, a spot that Lincoln Riley talked about specifically. A lot of dudes potentially in the mix. Michael Benuelos, Amos Tulalele, Alonia Noah. Where do you see this going, and what did Lincoln Riley have to say?
Gino Quinones is in there as well. I thought this was the most interesting answer that Lincoln Riley gave, and I will explain why. A lot of our longtime listeners have heard me say this before.
Uh-oh.
I probably said it in the last episode. I will continue to say it. This is how you parse coach speak. This is how you parse fall camp coach scrums. There will be a lot of reporters who are asking questions about specific players because they are looking to write about specific players. They already have an idea in their mind. They're going to write an article about Joe Smith. So they go to the coach and ask, how is Joe Smith doing? And the coach will say, oh yeah, Joe Smith is doing really well. He's improving. We've challenged him to do this, that, and the other thing. And taken on its own, you could see that quote without knowing how it was how the question was asked to the coach. You could see that quote and think, oh man, Joe Smith is really improving. Joe Smith is on his way. Like it's what I've sort of been getting at with the Kobe Pepe of it all. Like, I want to believe that Kobe Pepe is really getting into it, but the coaches are being asked about Kobe Pepe. The players are being asked about him. And so they're talking about him in a complimentary way because that's what you do with teammates. Not that they're lying, but, you know, it tends to be a more positive spin from players and coaches when you ask them about a specific player. So for me, I put extra weight on names that are brought up by the coach themselves without a reporter feeding it to them. Unprompted mentions, put a big star next to them, make a note of them, because those are the ones that you can trust are not being filtered through a, they asked about this, so I need to say something nice about this, filter, right? At right guard, I believe it was Mark Holkin asked Lincoln Riley about Amos Tulalele. I think I added an extra lay in there. I'm sorry.
Tulalele.
He asked about him and his progress.
Famous Amos.
His promise. Progress with the right guard battle and what he was doing to sort of put his name in there. And Riley said, I think very telling, brought up Amos and Alani Noah as players that have the ability and the mass and the movement, but that they need to work on understanding the game, reacting and communicating consistently. That's a very telling quote to me about them in terms of, like, that's very clear to me that USC really likes their potential, but those critical offensive line kind of things where it's not just about how big and strong and fast you are, it's about whether or not you understand your blocking assignments and can do them on a play-in and play-out basis. So clearly those guys, and it's not surprising, they're young, you know, young guys still developing, all of that kind of stuff. The name he brings up, unprompted, and starts to sort of say very nice things about is Micah Benuelos. He says he's starting to make a move right now, that he's finally healthy, that last season they had to shut him down because he had an injury and they knew they were going to have to address it, I believe, with surgery, and so they shut him down and he wasn't really able to contribute, but he's back, he's healthy now, and he's making moves at right guard. That is also big from the same sort of thing I was saying about Kobe Pepe. It's very big for USC. Any of these young offensive linemen that USC has coming up that have been recruited in the last 2 years, to hear that they are developing, to hear their names brought up specifically and unprompted as somebody who is standing out early, who is leaving a positive impression on the coaches, that is really, 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 really big on the offensive line, because there's just not a lot of depth there. And USC, the more of those guys that prove that they can play, whether or not Michael Benuelos is actually capable of winning over a starting job over someone like Alani Noah, who has experience there, or Gino Quinones, who has the sort of veteran growth that he's had. The fact that Michael Benuelos is being talked about in that way in fall camp makes me think, okay, so at the very least, I can start penciling him in as part of the rotation. And I am short on players that I can pencil into USC's rotation this offseason. And so I very, very like that. This makes me very happy. So I think that was the most interesting. And I don't want to read too much into it because, again, fall camp hype is what it is. And, right. You know, you never know. But I heard him go on that and I was like, oh, yes. Let's go. This is what I needed to hear. This is what I wanted to hear. These are the moments in scrums that I live for.
I am with you on the importance of unprompted things when people say that in press conferences. Because, and it's not just coaches. I think it's when players say anything that is unprompted, that carries a lot of weight because it's something that they want to talk about, something that they want to emphasize, etc. Especially like I see so many things. One of my biggest media pet peeves, and this isn't with the media, it's media literacy in terms of like Instagram comments. There'll be a Instagram post of a quote from some athlete who's saying this thing, and people are like, why do they keep talking about this? They shouldn't keep talking about that. It's like, they were in a press conference and asked about this because they had media availability, because that's what happens in press conferences, because there's a story of some sort that needs a quote in it, and that's why they were asked. Yeah. Like 99% of the time, somebody does not go to a press conference and just start speaking about things off the cuff. Players don't have opening statements like coaches do. And coaches, anything that's in the opening statement is unprompted. It's you know, that's where there's a lot of stuff that you can read in there. Where I push back on the being concerned, not necessarily pushing back, but like, I think it's important to note that like the media this year is able to watch fall camp. They can't comment on the specifics. If you're watching our friends over at uscfootball.com, they're talking about how they're at camp. They're able to see stuff. They can't comment on all the stuff because there's media restrictions. But I think that leads to smarter questions, right? It leads to if the media is being able to see somebody in camp have success, they're going to ask about those players. And so I think that we can look into the reasoning for guys being mentioned as having a lot of merit.
Yes. Well, like for instance, Jamel Cook got brought up a bunch of times because
he had like a pick six
media,
or right?
Media was there and watched him intercept three passes. And so everybody knew right. that Jamel Cook was doing things. And yeah, when practice is closed, reporters are just flying blind and they're sort of picking narratives based on narrative. When the reporters are allowed to view practice, even if they can't say like what the pecking order on the defensive line is, it does give us a hint that Kobe Pepe is at least out there doing something
exactly,
enough that,
yeah.
that people are asking about him, because the reporters aren't making that up out of thin air. Certainly not about somebody about like Kobe Pepe. I mean, with Carlin Jones, it literally might just be like, this is a new guy, a new freshman. Let's hear what the coach has to say about him.
Right.
But like Kobe Pepe, I would have gone into camp thinking that he was, you know, bottom of the depth chart and sort of going last in all of the drills and
yeah.
stuff. Like, I wouldn't have been factoring him in. So yeah, if I saw him being up there, you know, you can observe a bit of a pecking order when you're watching practice, and
right.
you know, that would be evident. So yeah, I think this is good.
Let's talk about another offensive lineman, Elijah Page. Who is huge, apparently, like,
I mean,
massive.
We knew he was huge, but like, he's huge.
So he's 6'7". There's a a clip from Chris Trevino, who put out a clip of him walking down the All-American Walk by the Sword, and he looks like he's 34 feet tall. And Pat McAfee of ESPN says this has to be an AI edit. Is that an 8 foot tall man? Alicia, he did not make the Bruce Feldman's Freaks list, which we're going to talk about in a couple minutes, but massive. And part of that goes to him sort of committing with Benny Wiley and the whole, system to get sort of yoked as the season goes.
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed this scrum from Riley, partly because it felt like he was sort of giving some very candid observations that I wouldn't necessarily always expect to hear. And maybe it's just because of years of listening to Clay Helton, but he talked about Elijah Page, and he said that when he arrived at USC, obviously 6'7" is huge, but he knew he was, quote, weak. and that in the off season of his freshman year, he really put in a ton of work with Benny Wiley, committing to the weight room to sort of build up his strength and develop into a viable player for USC to see in games. And it took him a little while to get going. He was demoted to the scout team for a little while, and Lincoln Riley complimented him on his response to that, where he viewed it as an opportunity to get better, and he did get better, and he did get stronger, and he did get more capable. And by the time they got to bowl practices, they basically said he just looked like a different person, and that's why they felt confident in putting him in there at left tackle and having him be the starter. And he went in there and proved that he could handle that role. And I think that it's become very clear that this offseason that he is USC's starting left tackle, and there really isn't a debate. And then you get a look at him in that video, and you're like, well, yeah, well, yeah, I can see why. I will say it is nice, USC, all of the questions, like, is USC big enough to play in the Big Ten and all that kind of stuff. It is nice to see USC get some national recognition about a dude on the team who is literally just massive.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of massive, one of the guys who's making a sort of a massive move, we'll see how significant of a move, is Jaden Maiava. He's been, all accounts are much improved since the spring in terms of things like communication and the operating system. What is he? Is
operating he the system.
Oh, operating the system. Okay, I was going to say, like, yeah. We're talking like Snow Leopard? We talking Big Sur? What are we talking over here?
Yeah, I just thought it was nice to hear Lincoln Riley talk about how Maiava, and he said, you know, all quarterbacks take some time to get used to the system, but that he's made that leap that they sort of expect him to make in terms of comfortability and ability to just to navigate the offense. And this was always the thing that we said that Miller Moss had a clear leg up on, because he'd been right. 2 years with Lincoln Riley's system, and that experience is invaluable. And Jaden Maiava might have, I mean, there have been clips going around of Jaden Maiava throwing the ball, and it's like, damn, this dude can throw it, and it's very, very exciting.
Would you say it's darts only?
Darts only, yes. I know exactly. I'm literally in the middle of writing an article.
Did you see the Arkansas one?
My article that I'm going to be publishing on fansided.com shortly is darts only. College football Twitter comes together to clown Colorado for their cringe viral video. And it's literally Arkansas, Maryland, Troy, Montana, there was another big one. Missouri, the Big Ten put out one with Nebraska. The Frisco Rough Riders, who you have their hat, they put out a thing. The Emeralds, what's that minor league team?
Eugene Emeralds
put one out. NHL, the Jets. Winnipeg Jets put one out. Like, it's all been very funny.
So if you missed it, Colorado on Tuesday put out a post that said darts only, and it's a picture of Shedeur Sanders sort of stepping up in the pocket, throwing a pass, and you see the ball just go off into the distance, and you kind of lose it, and then he immediately cuts to the end zone where it's caught for a touchdown. And apparently, this is the same pass but it is the worst editing you've ever seen in your life because it makes it look like it's not the same pass.
You know, in a movie when the actor takes the shot and then they cut to the basketball hoop where the ball goes in with a swish and you're like, well, the actor didn't hit that. That's what the clip looked like.
And the Arkansas one is so perfect because it's like he's rolling to the right or whatever. He throws like a bullet pass, then all of a sudden it pans to like a touch pass. It's so good.
Darts only.
Yeah, so we'll see if Miob is throwing darts only or Moss is throwing darts only and who wins the battle.
Ole Miss has a quarterback named Dart, and Lane Kiffin is their head coach. If they don't get on this soon, then I will be deeply disappointed.
Yeah, that I think the depth chart over there is darts only.
Dart only.
Yeah. Dant Lynn had a meeting with the media as well. He talked about the linebackers, EMA, Easton Mascarenhas Arnold, and Cobb, and how they are sort of helping each other sort of play those Mike and the Will spot.
Yeah, I think it's, again, all of these things, I'm just sort of looking for clues about what USC's depth chart's going to look like, what the rotation's going to look like, what the usage is all going to look like. And I think it's extremely notable that every time the linebackers get talked about, it's a pair.
Mm-hmm.
It's EMA and Cobb. It's Easton Mascarenhas and Cobb. Cobb and Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. It's those two. That doesn't mean that someone like Eric Gentry, who I'm beginning to wonder if he's injured because I haven't heard anything about him and it's hard to keep track with him, and others, you know, they might be on the fringe, they might be just not practicing, whatever it is. It's that pair that definitely is the pair. And Lynn talked about how they're both playing both spots so that they can know all levels of the defense, which is obviously very good, but that it is very much Easton Mascarenhas Arnold and Mason Cobb, and I'm taking note of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lynn also emphasized obnoxious communication, shocking effort, and attack as sort of some buzzwords.
I'm calling it Oaxia.
Oaxia?
Oaxia. Oaxia. C-E-C. Oaxy. Oaxy. Oxy?
No, I hope it's not Oxy. Can't be Oxy. Can't be that addictive.
I just really like the term obnoxious communication. Like, the gist of that is basically he wants his defense to be like that annoying person who points out everything while you're driving. Like, look at that, and look at that, and look at that, and look at that. But he wants them to be doing it with, like, the tight end location, where the backs are, you know, what the splits are, what the down and distance is, what the personnel is, what the call is, what the checks are. Like, he wants them to be just talking all the time. Obnoxious communication. I think that's kind of cool, and it's a cool way to frame it because, you know, it's felt at times that USC's defense has not communicated particularly well in recent years, and hopefully this comes to something.
See, this sounds awesome. But at the same time, I do think that coach quotes like this, coach like buzzwords, are one of those things that sounds so badass when you have optimism. Yeah. And when a guy is winning. When somebody is in, like, turmoil, it sounds absolutely corny.
The first
like
time,
like the Jim Harbaugh thing. Like, what's the thing? Like,
enthusiasm unknown to mankind or, like, something like that. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds cool the first time you say it.
Well, it's cool until there's the first instance of miscommunication that leads to a long touchdown, and then yeah. Everyone's like, obnoxious communication.
Right.
That communication was obnoxious, you know. So I don't know, but I like it.
We'll see how it goes. Let's talk about Bruce Feldman's annual freaks list. Two Trojans made it: Zachariah Branch and Emmanuel Pregnon. Branch is number 49, Pregnon number 84. We talked about Elijah Page before. Did not make it, but maybe after the video from Chris, maybe an honorable mention should have been in the cards for him at least.
I mean, you gotta think. Bear Alexander, also large human. There's some large humans, but I want to credit USC Analytics on Twitter because I think they sort of boiled it down.
Great Twitter account, by the way.
Yes. Highly recommend you give them a follow. They sort of broke it down as why did Zachariah Branch make the freaks list? And it's his body fat percentage dropped from 5.8 to 4.6. He bench pressed 350 pounds. He recorded a max speed of 23.2 miles per hour, which was the fastest on the team. He has a 10-yard split of 1.44 seconds, and he's one of only three players who recorded only three players at the NFL Combine this year recorded a faster 10-yard split.
I got to say, those stats all reminiscent of what I can put down, so I can relate to all of this. Yeah.
Well, 1,000%. I can relate to the concept of him going to 23.2 miles per hour and having a 10-yard split of 1.44 seconds because I play college football 95
speed, baby.
College football 25. I mean, somebody in the chat. Let me pull it up.
Ilium 55
brought up how what I have been thinking the entire time I've been playing that video game, based on college football 25. Let's throw all streaks to Branch. We won't need a D anyway. They should have like 200 touchdowns. Yes, I mean, if ever there was an argument for just having Zachariah Branch go deep on every single play, it is college football 25 because that's literally what I do. And I throw touchdown after touchdown after touchdown because the defenders in that game certainly cannot keep up with him.
He makes me drool.
It makes me excited for Zachariah Branch. I mean, speed is not the only thing that a receiver needs, but man, if he is as fast in real life on the football field for USC this year as he is in that game, then he is a certain freak.
Yeah, Pregnon, max recorded speed of 17.8 miles an hour. That seems pretty good for an offensive lineman.
For an offensive lineman who's like 315 pounds, yeah.
Yeah.
He bench pressed 10 reps at 315, recorded max speed of 17.8. 10-yard split of 1.68 would tie second for fastest 10-yard split among offensive linemen at the last two NFL combines. So again, these are very good numbers. This is part of the reason why when Emmanuel Pregnon was brought in as a transfer, we were excited about him. He had all of the measurables, and it was kind of disappointing to see him struggle the way that he did this past season. But again, it's a reminder that we have to bring up that offensive line transfers, the data seems to suggest that they don't necessarily work out the first year that they transfer to a new place. But then you know, with a year in the system, you're getting comfortable with what he's being asked to do with the guys that are around him. This could be a big breakout year for Emmanuel Pregnon. He could end up putting his draft stock in a really good place if he plays well. But again, this is always the challenge, especially at USC where the athletes have never been lacking.
Yeah.
It's about being able to pair that athleticism, that size, and that speed with the actual game of football.
Yeah, take that for dinner. Absolutely. Alicia, it's time. It's time for our weekly Big Ten segment, a Big Ten Minutes. The final one. Of course, we didn't do 17 of these because we know about Oregon. We know about UCLA. We know about Washington. We don't need to learn about them. It's all about learning about the other ones. We've talked about Illinois and Indiana and Iowa and Maryland and Michigan and Michigan State, and suddenly I'm talking like what's his face said, we're gonna go to Minnesota, we're gonna go to Nebraska, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, and now we're gonna wrap this thing up with
a Big 10 Minutes
on Wisconsin. Let's talk about the University of Wisconsin, renamed University of Wisconsin-Madison, when the thing expanded, the university system. Founded in 1848 as the University of Wisconsin in Madison. They are the Badgers, and Alicia, yet another lame, boring naming of the team. I'm sorry. This the final Big Ten plague here. The team's name, this is per UWBadgers.com. The team's nickname, Badgers, was borrowed from the state of Wisconsin. The territory was dubbed the Badger State, not because of animals, but rather in association with lead miners in the 1820s. Prospectors came to the state looking for minerals. Without shelter in the winter, the miners had to live like badgers in tunneled burrows into hillsides.
I kind of like
that. You kidding
me? I kind of like that as an origin for an. I mean, it's
for a the state, yes. For the Badger state, but like,
yes.
God, this is it's lazy. Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, all of these not named the thing that they are because instead it's just a metaphor for something, and not yep. like a metaphor in the fought hard like Wildcats way, like Northwestern, but more so a Hawkeye is a reference to the people who live in Iowa. Like, what are we doing here?
Yep.
It's terrible. But Badgers, on the surface, if it truly was the animal, elite mascot, Bucky Badger looks awesome.
I will say, yes, I think Bucky Badger is iconic, one of the iconic college football mascots.
Yes, 100%. Let's talk about the fight song, one of the greatest in the history of all fight songs. Onward, Narbonne. Onward, Narbonne. Gallop through that line. Run the ball. Clear down the field, boys. Touchdown, sure this time. Onward, sure Narbonne. Onward, Narbonne.
Are you sure this is the Wisconsin
fight
song? Fight
on for
Michael?
Our fame. Fight gout. What? What?
Are you sure this
oh,
is the
sorry,
Wisconsin
sorry.
Fight song,
I had
Michael?
The wrong words. I'm used to that version. On Wisconsin. Plunge right through that line. Run the ball. Clear down the field, boys. Touchdown, sure this time. On Wisconsin. Fight on for her fame. Fight, fellows. Fight. We'll win this game.
A plus fight song.
Because it's got fight on in
it's nice and tight. It the rhyme schemes all fit.
No raw though.
There's no raw. There's no. I mean, are you really a Big Ten team if you don't have a rah? So I'll dock them for that. But no, this one is A pluses all across. I love it.
Let's talk about weird Wisconsin facts. Innovations and discoveries have been all about the university of Wisconsin-Madison's history. Innovations and discoveries by researchers of the university include the round silo, innovated in Madison at the university. Vitamin A, founded there. Vitamin B, founded there. And SpaghettiOs.
Oh.
SpaghettiOs. Kind of, but seriously, really, in 1965, Wisconsin MBA grad Donald Gerke of the Campbell Soup Company. He was working for the Franco-American segment of that, which, what a name, Franco-American. he became the inventor of SpaghettiOs and was bestowed the title of, quote, Daddy-O of SpaghettiOs. According to his obituary in the New York Times, rest in peace, Gerke chose the O shape of SpaghettiOs for three reasons. Logistically, they made canning really easy because they're just little O's. Functionally, they were able to be scoopable on a spoon. And most importantly, they accounted for less mess with children because they weren't long and stringy like real spaghetti and messy. So look at Donald Gerke prioritizing the mental health of parents. What a king.
I have seen way too many pictures of kids with SpaghettiOs with SpaghettiO all over their face.
But not as bad as...
I call BS.
Not as bad as real spaghetti.
Eat spaghetti, you can eat them a spoon. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Yeah. Congratulations to the Badgers for coming up with that one. Other notable alums, how about Charles Walter Hart? He coined the word tractor.
Oh.
He went to Washington. Wisconsin. Wrong UW. Gaylor Nelson, former U.S. Senator, was the Wisconsin governor and the founder of Earth Day. Oh. He went to Wisconsin. William Blackwin, he was instrumental in the development of the Truth Serum. I'm telling you, random innovations.
What's that called? The
alcohol?
What?
That was a joke.
Oh, that was a joke. No, sorry. No, I'm trying to. There's a name for it.
I just call it Truth Serum.
Quote unquote Truth Serum is like a Just move on. I can't remember.
I'm running out. We're running out of time.
Yes.
10 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead. Here we go.
Michael Dewey, the co-inventor of the Macintosh 2 and the iPod. He was a badger. How about David H. Geiger, the inventor of air-supported fabric roof systems used at various dome stadiums like the Tokyo Dome, Metrodome, Silver Dome, and everyone's least favorite dome, Tropicana Field. Edward Childhauer, chief engineer of the Panama Canal Project. A ton of really cool things here. Mm-hmm. Actress Joan Cusack is a badger. Rapper Young Gravy, a badger. Director Michael Mann. Legendary musician Steve Miller of the Steve Miller Band. Boz Scaggs. Everyone's least favorite man in the history of sports, Bud Selig. And a lot of hockey players. Chris Chelios, Kings legend Tony Granato. Cujo, Curtis Joseph, great save, Joseph! Ryan McDonough, longtime shark and owner of Zero Cups, Joe Pavelski. American hero, Brian Rafalski and Mike Richter, along with women's Team USA star, Hillary Knight. They're all badgers. Alicia, what's your perception of Wisconsin fans?
Generally positive. Yeah. I feel like they're in the Nebraska category of,
it looks
of really loyal. Well, yes, but really loyal, good fans, know their football, respectful, more or less.
Lots of beer drinking, lots of polka. Yeah. I love the beer barrel polka in Wisconsin. First athlete or person that comes to mind when you think of Wisconsin, it's got to be Barry Alvarez.
Yeah,
Ron Dayne, Heisman winner. In 99, J.J. Watt, Russell Wilson, all of those Rose Bowls we've seen in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
Zero national titles, which I think is the biggest shock. Like, well, Wisconsin's, are they the biggest brand to never win a title? Them and Oregon? It's got to be, right?
If it's not them, I can't think of it. They got to be there.
14 Big 12 titles, the most recent one in 2012. USC is 6-1 all time against the Badgers. Most recently, it played in the 2015 Holiday Bowl, the infamous Cody Kessler check down to Darius Rogers on fourth down of a Hail Mary attempt at the final play of the game. There's the 1963 Rose Bowl, one of the greatest Rose Bowls in the history of the game. The first ever number one versus number two in a bowl game. The Trojans win their first national championship under John McKay. Nearly blew a 42-14 lead, but they didn't. They won 42-37. Badger quarterback Ron Vanderkellen led four unanswered drives of the Badgers in the fourth quarter, but SC still hung on. USC and Wisconsin meet later this year, September 28th. USC's first ever Big Ten home game will be at home against the Badgers, September 28th. USC will return the favor and go to Madison in 2026. The Badgers, of course, coached by Luke Fickell going into year two. Luke Fickell, formerly of Cincinnati, a guy who was sort of bandied about as a potential candidate for USC a couple years ago when Cincinnati was doing, you know, super good. He moves on to Wisconsin. They were 8-6 last year in year one for him. We'll see what they do in year two. They have 12 returning starters, but they add key transfers like former Miami quarterback Tyler Van Dyke. He's a Badger. He should be signal caller for the Badgers this year. And then there's former USC linebacker Tackett Curtis. Those are your Wisconsin Badgers. There you go.
Hit the post. Nice.
And that is a Big 10 Minutes.
And that is the Big 10 Minutes.
That's all of them.
A big round of applause for Michael, because these were all really great. There's a lot of research went into them. And
Thank you.
Yeah. Loved it.
And big round of applause for Master Sith 40 joining us in the Rot Squad and
with a super chat.
So we appreciate you. Yeah, that's like 10 minutes. We did, 14 schools, I believe?
140 minutes of...
140 minutes.
Of Big Ten knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which,
of course, is what the N on the side of the Nebraska helmet stands for.
Knowledge, exactly.
All right, Alicia, let's get into the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
We got to start with a phone call. We finally got a phone call. Someone finally called the number. It's been a long time. Nobody ever calls us anymore. People hate us.
We were worried.
No respect in here.
It was going to get shut off because no one was calling.
I know. Last time, little inside baseball, the reason that we lost the original phone number was because I hadn't logged in like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it like automatically.
We weren't getting calls.
Closes. So I've been like calling myself and texting myself to make sure the line stays alive because people don't like calling us. Who knows? It might have to shut down the thing going forward, like you said. 818-643-7227 is the phone number, but Tony gave us a call.
Michael, Alicia, this is Tony from Denora, PA. Fall camp is here. Yes, fight on.
Man of few words.
Let's go.
But Tony delivers.
Tony is our most consistent contributor to the mailbag, whether via email or now call. So big ups to Tony. We appreciate you, Tony and Denora, PA. It's always great to hear from you. So yeah, we're all pumped. It's fall camp. Soon it'll be season. Here we go.
Yeah,
not too far away. Just a few weeks.
Just a few weeks. Yeah. We're looking at 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
We're running
away.
Out of time. We need to start like planning our lead up to the season, like episodes where we sort of are running out of time. To do the things that we normally do.
Season predictions coming up soon. Looking forward to that. So that way when people are like, well, how many wins do you think we're going to win? When people ask that in May, it's like, I don't know, circle back for August. Here we are. We're just a couple weeks away from that. I wanted to get to a comment that we got on YouTube, but now I can't find. But it was from West Texas Mike talking about like one of the good things about the uptick in coaches, having a special teams coordinator puts a face to the name.
Yeah.
which is
somebody that for people to yell at.
It's funny from the internet perspective of like, you know who to complain about now, or you know who to praise. If anything happens, even though
I agreed,
of course coaches don't get praised, players get praise and coaches get blamed.
I agreed with the general discussion in our chat during that, which is, and I forget who said it, but I think it was Tim who said that 80% of USC's problems on special teams would be solved if they just got fair caught. So hopefully whoever the special teams coordinator is, there was a comment about maybe Matt Entz taking over more responsibilities there. I'm not 1,000,000% sure on that, but it would make sense for him to sort of have input there. I hope that input is fair catch, always fair catch, and then fair catch again. I'm sorry, Zachariah Branch, you're great, you're wonderful, but let's have you use your speed to USC's advantage in the passing game.
Yeah.
And not return anything ever.
Yeah, we'll see how that all comes to be. The artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody, our favorite rotbot above the I was gonna say above the equator. We're all above the equator, I think, most of us.
Yeah. Well, we got listeners below the equator.
Do we?
We do.
We got like listeners in like
John in Cape Town.
Oh yeah, you're right. I was gonna say, do we have anyone in Botswana? But I guess yeah.
Listen, I don't know if he's. I can't remember if he's still in Cape Town or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. How could I forget? You know who we miss? Still above the equator, but what was his name? Witherspoon, a 9-year-old boy outside of London. Witherspoon.
Yes.
Above the equator.
Above the equator.
Yeah. Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody, our favorite robot above the northern border in Canada.
Yes.
He says the quality of the coaches is more important than quantity. Great discussion on this. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the perfect way to put it.
And it's also the makeup of your coaching staff, because you could add a million coaches, and if they don't mesh, get along, if they have different ideas, you can almost create too many voices for players. Clarity, simplicity, all of that is important. So again, there's diminishing returns on going all out. But I do think, you know, being able to offer more money to better coaches to stick around is definitely a help.
Yeah, well, 100%. Let's go to a question from Roman Murdy. How much of an impact will the helmet headsets have on the speed of the game?
I mean, theoretically, it could speed things up because you don't have to wait. Just the delay in the coach getting it to the guys who are signaling, then have to put up their signs or do their signs or whatever, and then get interpreted by the quarterback, who then has to relay it to the, you know, or whatever. However, all of those little steps, you sort of condense them down to one. The coach delivers the play to the quarterback. Will USC go faster because of this? I don't know. I think maybe realistically, some of those delay of game penalties that USC ended up with, frustratingly, because they're like chain, you know, because there's whatever the delay that would happen in getting the play in will be lessened because you'll just be able to radio. But are they doing the thing where you only get like 5 seconds? Yeah, I don't know what the timing is.
Situation?
That's why I think that there you could end up in a situation where you still have the you radio in, but I think in the NFL you only get I want to say it's five seconds.
I think it stops after when 15 seconds are on the clock.
On the clock, yeah. And then you might
wasn't that the thing in the Super Bowl, like the Patriots were waiting for the thing to stop, and then they were making a whole bunch of changes so that the Rams couldn't use the thing.
Yeah, so I think you would still potentially utilize your, like, for lack of a better term, like analog methods of changing a play on the sideline.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. We'll see. I'm sure there will be teams out there who try to push the envelope in terms of how quickly they can go. Because there are teams that want to do that. I don't know that USC is one of those teams, though.
Yeah, we will see. We'll see how it changes things. I mean, the timing rules are always one of the things that you notice no matter what. I mean, 2006, those weird timing rules. Last year, we noticed things with the timing rules as well. Mark says, so College Football 25 isn't real life, but on defense, I average 3 interceptions a game and 2 forced fumbles. Lock it in. There we go.
I choose not to.
Oh, wrong button.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
You blitz.
There we go.
All
that's
night.
That's my defense.
That's Mark's defense right there.
That's no. So my defense is blitz all night, without the interceptions and without the forced fumbles. Because on Heisman, I'm giving up like 45 points a game. But that's fine. That's fine. I will say, playing again, it's not real life, so I'm not actually trying to draw too many conclusions. But I will say, playing with USC's defense in the game is not too bad. The defensive line is pretty nice to play with. You know, there's a lot to like there.
Yeah,
Easton Mascarenhas Arnold is great in that game. So yeah,
yeah, Kamari Ramsey's great. Mm-hmm. Nicholson's great. Yeah, there's a bunch of guys making a lot of plays on defense and on offense for the Trojans. So, yeah, that's gonna wrap up today's episode. We'll be back next week, but more importantly, we'll be back later this week. We should have talked about this earlier. Right?
We should. Yeah.
We're gonna have our annual preseason roundtable coming later this week. I think we're doing audio only, so if you listen to us on the audio channels, your Spotify, your Apple Podcasts, look for that. Either we'll post it over the weekend, or might wait until Monday to put it out, one of those things. But look for that. We're going to have our buddy Jake from the What's Brewing Show here, and the guys over at Traveler Hates Thursdays, formerly of Traveler Hates Thursdays, Kenny and Simon are joining us. So look forward to that. It's going to be fun, just like the old days. Talk about USC football. The 5 of us all circling around the table, talking expectations, hopes, dreams, vibes, all those things.
A lot of vibes. A lot of vibes chat, I think we're going to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Aura, Skibbity Riz.
Yeah.
We're going to be like, who's Ohio?
Do you know,
Yeah.
I was listening to a TikTok, not to get off topic, but I was listening to a TikTok and they were talking about I think you were maybe listening to the TikTok. The TikTok where it was just a bunch of like teachers who were talking about like one time my student said I had skibbity riz and skibbity do whatever, and like another one was like, and all the students were saying these things and all of them were, I had no idea what any of it means or understand it. Mm-hmm. And I'm increasingly understanding the adults in my life growing up who like would,
how do you do, fellow kids?
It's that commercial. Yeah, how do you do, fellow kids? It's that commercial where the girl is speaking entirely in text speak and the parent is like, what is it? Like, I feel like I have become the parent where I don't understand what the text speak actually means.
Here's a question for you. How good were you at T9 Word?
I was quite good. I miss T9. I feel like I was way better at T9 than I am with the stupid touchscreen on. Again, sounding like a boomer crazy. The touchscreen on my iPhone, I can't text. It's so hard. I mean,
you do have your text at large size. So
I have to put it there because, like, I am blind. But, like, no, because I feel like I miss the buttons all the time. I can't text very quickly because I feel like it's constantly mistake and mistake and mistake. Like with T9, I could roll. I could text, you know, blindly with this freaking iPhone. My
favorite thing about T9 was the ability, and people younger than us and people older than us will never know what this means. There is a very, like, I feel like if you're in our age group, if you're in a certain subset of the millennials, you know, the like 4 years that we all got proficient at T9.
Mm-hmm.
But sitting in physics class, just being able to text under the table.
From your pocket. You could text this. Pocket.
I'm
just
texting like this. You don't need to look at anything.
You could write a dissertation.
Yeah, it was
from
great.
Inside your pocket. You didn't need beautiful. To see the screen.
And kids these days
trusted,
have to look at it now.
You trusted
can you believe
your,
it?
You, that you had it on yeah. I mean,
it was incredible.
Kids these days, I don't even know.
Kids these days and their skibbities.
And their skibbities and their toilets and their riz and...
They'll never know. They'll never know what we had to do with an LAUSD.
I wasn't
an
LAUSD, but...
Yeah. Your rich private school. You didn't have powdered soap like we had. We had to endure.
You went to, like, the more you tell me about your high school, the more I am convinced that you were in juvie.
Narmon basically was like being in juvie. It was, but 2-time state champs. So that's all that matters. But
hi, all Roger right. Dodger in the chat. Sorry you missed the show. We're on our way out now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll be back. Check us out for our roundtable coming to you soon, and we'll be back with another live show next week. So until then, we will see you. See ya. See ya.